It's the turn of the Will-lennium, and a surprise box office smash hit series is finishing up its first trilogy.
And it's not as good as the first two, but Carrie Fisher's in it. This week is week two of February Scary, and we're talking about the movie Scream 3.
How Star Wars!
Well, hello there, Mike.
Hi, Josiah.
Hello, listeners around the world, around the globe.
Around
welcome
the
to
Chicago
the show.
Area and then also the world.
Yeah, around the Chicago area, specifically the northern part.
My we're trying neighborhood. To find
Mike's neighborhood. We're trying to find somebody. We'll talk about that later. Welcome to the show. This is How Star Wars Is It.
We're trying to find somebody.
We're trying to find someone. A misconnection. Uh-huh. This is How Star Wars Is It. It is the only podcast, and we rate things on a scale of 1 to 10, of not of how good or bad they are, but of how Star Wars they are.
That's right. You ever see a movie and you think, wow, that's kind of Star Wars? This is that.
Yeah, this is what that is. But also,
or conversely, you ever see a Star Wars movie and you leave all shitty and pissy about it, and you're like, that wasn't Star Wars.
Yeah, you pee and poop your pants, and you're like, this is not Star Wars.
Have you seen that TikTok that's like, what have I been up to lately? Well, and then it's like a rap, and she's like, I make a de poopy, make a de pee, watch The Sopranos on TV. And it's like, it keeps going from there. But I think that is such a funny like line about like what life is like right now.
I haven't seen that, but I do remember seeing a TikTok a while ago about how it's like pee pee, people that said pee pee poo poo or poo poo pee pee. It's like, which one do you say, what order it's in?
Hmm.
And it's like, there's an English tradition.
Yeah, like TikTok, like TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok, pee poo. Like it has to be, it feels a little weird to say poo poo pee pee.
Right.
It feels backwards, even though, like,
right.
Why does it feel backwards?
Right.
But yeah.
Right.
It is the like, ta.
Yeah, the like oral posture of the mouth.
Yeah.
That's redundant, oral and mouth.
It's the mouth posture of the mouth.
Yeah. It's the PIN number for the ATM machine.
One time. In high school, we saw a acapella group from a local college perform, and
that's
they were doing
redundant
like
as well.
Yeah, sorry.
We saw an acapella group.
Saw an acapella group, and they were doing like, but it was like not even just acapella. They were doing like vocal jazz.
Oh,
which
sure.
Was so it sucked. It was bad.
Because I've heard a version of that that is good. There's a Ben Folds did a college a cappella album of like songs of his, and ooh. There was a like jazz a cappella group that did Selfless, Cold, and Compose, and it like fucking slaps.
Mm.
But go
there
ahead.
There is good a cappella. This was not that. But the song was about like communication or like words. It was like words, words, words. And at one point, one of the guys goes, oral intercourse. And I was like, no. Mm. We were all kind of like, no, we're in high school. That means sex, oral sex. You said oral sex,
which
up
is
there.
Sex.
Which is sex. It was
anyway,
very strange.
Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to the podcast.
We're like we said in the beginning. There, we're reviewing the Scream movies this month because there's a new one out that we still have to see. But We reviewed the first Scream movie like a year or two ago, and last week we did Scream 2, so today we're doing Scream 3, and again, the goal is to compare it to Star Wars.
That's right, and I watched this movie for the first time completely recently. I had been in the room when it was being watched.
And you're talking recently, like in the last like couple days.
Yeah, I watched it on like Friday, and
that's
it is
great.
Now Monday.
Because I watched it, like, I also watched it recently, but that was like maybe a month ago. So I watched a recap today, and I like remember like some of the kills and some of the like cameos and stuff. But I'm gonna lean on you for like the synopsis.
Lots of cameos in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Jay and Silent Bob are there for some reason. Very random.
Very random.
And to get this out of the way, we already talked about it in the cold open. Carrie Fisher's in it.
Yeah, and she's playing a woman, an actor, a Hollywood actor who looks like Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Almost in the way that Julia Roberts' character in Ocean's 12 has to stand in as Julia Roberts during one of their kind of heisty moments.
And they make, and there's a joke where she's like, I was up for Princess Leia, but I didn't sleep with George Lucas.
Yes,
it's
right.
Like a nice little fun, self-deprecating joke. She's in it for like a scene. It's great. And it's the most, so that's a lot of Star Wars points right out the gate,
right,
if we're being completely honest here.
You know who else is in it? Speaking of just our show, what's her face? Parker Posey.
Parker
who,
Posey.
Who, of course, is also in Josie and the Pussycats.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Oh, yeah.
And she's having a great time in this flick.
Boy, is
she. She's giving 110%. She's going, this movie is silly.
Yeah, this is a silly movie that is fully aware of how silly it is. So, like, it gets points for that, you know, not in terms of being Star Wars, but like, this is a movie that of the three up to this point, there's only three Screams that exist. It is without a doubt the worst of the three, but it is also like it is aware that it's the worst of the three and like leans in, which is like, yeah. Oh, well, then I'm not going to hold too much against you.
Yeah, I like it.
Yes.
I liked the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, this was goofy. There was like, I didn't like it as much as the second one. I definitely, nothing compares to the first one because the first one's just like so ground-breaking. I told Mike we have to start saying that again.
That's right. We said that on like, what, our first episode?
Something like that. And we used to say it all the time. And someone said groundbreaking the other day, like on a TV show, and I was like, groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about groundbreaking. It's so funny. It was in Search Party, which I'm finally watching the new season.
Oh, it was so good.
He's like, Jeff Goldblum's like a groundbreaking ceremony or whatever. And he's like literally breaking ground. And
yes.
I was like, groundbreaking.
We should do a Search Party episode.
We should, because I will finish it semi-soon.
Yeah.
At the very least, we'll talk about it on the Patreon. At the
sure.
Very least. What goes on in this movie? Okay. Let's break it down. So in this movie... So in Scream 2... The movie Stab has been released in theaters.
Right. Scream 2 like centers around a movie version of the first movie being made in the universe.
Yeah. In this movie, they are in production for Stab 3.
Because this is Scream 3. So presumably Stab 2 has come out.
Stab 2 has come out. Stab 2 apparently was based on the events of Scream 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stab 3 is just made up stuff. Because there haven't been any new murders, but they have to make more movies. And so it's just like same characters, but it's all recast. There's some great jokes where it's like, no wonder David Schwimmer didn't want to come back for this.
Or, yeah.
Like they recast Tori Spelling with the British woman who's doing an American accent and whose name I don't remember.
Yeah, wait.
Who's playing a very different role than she ever plays ever for the rest of her life. It's very interesting. And anti-vax lady is
in
the movie for a second. But... So, Stab 3 is being filmed in the universe. We open with a murder of a previous character.
Cotton
who was
Weary.
Very Cotton Weary, who was very important in Scream 2.
Yeah, so just like What's-His-Face, Jamie Kennedy getting murdered in the second movie, the idea that like if you survived a movie, you make it to the next one and survive that one, like that was sort of thwarted by the fact that What's-His-Face was killed. Jamie Kennedy, Randy... And mm-hmm. so, like, Liev Schreiber getting killed at the beginning of this is like, oh, okay. So, like, at the beginning of any new Scream movie, no one except presumably Sydney is safe.
Yeah, and even this one, they leave you guessing a little bit because there is... Okay, we'll get there. There is a part where Jamie Kennedy is in this movie because he makes a video...
In the craziest way.
At some point
this
during the
events... This movie has, like, five of those. Like, moments where, like, something happens that is entirely inexplicable. The voice changer comes to mind, and then also the fact that Sydney had the wherewithal to have two guns on her shin. so that if she were to use a wand metal detector, she would like be able to throw away one but still have the other. Like, you anticipated the bad guy asking you to use an airport metal detector? Come on.
All the mom stuff, like,
yeah.
Also, it's like
Sydney's earlier, mom, that slut.
early in the movie, like, we're like, is she dreaming?
Yeah.
Is the killer there and messing with her? What's happening?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's weird. But Jamie Kennedy leaves a VHS message during the events of Scream 2 being like, watch this if I die.
And even though they coincidentally run into his sister, who for whatever reason has that videotape on her person. Yeah.
She's
and her,
like,
his sister is the best friend from Princess Diaries.
Yeah. She specifically says that she came here to give that to them. So it seems that, like, but what's not clear is, did they just find this VHS? Because it's been years since the last murders. And like,
Jamie Kennedy died as a college student and looks 38.
Yeah, he aged during Scream 2. He aged a lot and then made this VHS.
Yeah.
But it's where it gets really meta, because he starts talking about,
yeah, like, you're in a trilogy now.
You're in a trilogy now. If he's like, if it's not just a sequel, if it's a trilogy, then normal rules don't apply.
Right.
Because sequel rules are different if it's the end of a trilogy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and I feel like he makes Star Wars references.
I think that's that. Right. I can't remember what the monologue was.
There's a decent amount of Star Wars references in this that I clocked. Like, most specifically being, obviously, Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia. But yeah. At the very beginning of the movie, Sydney is in...
he was born in 1970, and this was 2000, so like presumably it was like maybe 99 when they filmed it. He would have been 29, if not 30. Yeah.
Me playing a 19-year-old all the time. So in the beginning of this movie, Sydney is in hiding, basically. Like, she is living in the boonies. She has a dog.
Under an assumed name.
She's working from home.
Yeah,
she was ahead of the game. She's working from home, working for like a women's crisis like hotline, which is, I think, is a cool like job for her.
Yeah,
like that
yeah.
makes a lot of sense to me. Her dad is in the movie, like knows where she is and like helps her out a little bit. But then there's these murders happening to the people who are in the movie Stab 3, and so that brings her out of hiding, because Dewey, of course, is working
like
on
set dresser.
He's like a expert witness kind of thing,
yeah,
for a movie.
He's like
where
a
he's
consultant
like,
on the film.
Right. And so he's there, and Gale ends up showing up because of the murder of Cotton.
Either she got a really bad bang haircut.
Oh, it's bad. Were the bangs in this one? They
yeah,
were in this,
this
one.
This one.
The baby bangs?
They were bad,
oh, they're
yeah.
bad. She looks the worst she's ever looked. She gets brought in because the cops specifically reach out to her and bring her in to be like, we know you're an expert on these murders. We think there's something happening again.
Because at this point, she has, you know, written the book on the original murders and like is famous for being the expert. Yeah.
Yeah. So we find out that there's like some bad blood that like Dewey and Gale tried to make it work, but it didn't work.
But there used to be mad love.
There used to be mad love. That, don't get me started on how no words in that chorus rhyme.
It was a really deep cut.
Look what you've done.
Like, done? Sure, the like short U vowel is in all of them.
I love T Swift.
I don't.
And I also love using rhymes in unconventional ways where, because like the least interesting rhyme to me is like, I don't know, the kind that's
wife
like
wife and strife.
Yeah. If it's literally the exact same, like I would prefer wife and I don't know. I can't think of examples now.
Yeah.
But like if the vowel is the same and the surrounding consonants are different, like I prefer that than if it's just the same exact last four letters or whatever.
Especially if it's a word that is like only a song word. That's why I say strife.
Wife
because
and strife.
Like people don't
no one ever
fucking
says
strife. Yeah.
But in that song, baby, now you got bad blood. It used to be mad love. You made a really big cut.
Look what you've done.
Just look what you've done. Yeah. And also, done is sucks.
It's like very lazy syllabically.
Like bad blood, mad love. I don't mind. I don't mind bad blood and mad love. Like, I don't mind that.
Fine.
You made a really big cut. Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah. Say like, just, cat.
Yeah. You made a really big cut. I don't even know. Put one more syllable in there so that it matches the previous one. Because bad blood, mad love, cut.
Yeah, I agree.
Done.
Totally agree.
Sucks. It sucks. I used to do this bit that I said that Taylor Swift doesn't know how to rhyme.
Yeah.
And that was like my biggest, like the biggest offender is that song.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
I don't know. You said something Gale. About bad blood, and then I said mad love.
Oh, there's bad blood between Gale and Dewey, but like we sort of get to see their romance re-blossom at the end of the movie.
That's the thing with horror slasher type movies is they kind of have to bend over backwards to start from the beginning again every time.
Yeah.
You know? And so like... That's why, spoiler, we learn that, like, the killer has to do with the killings of the first movie, and it's like, it could have just been a new reason.
Okay, spoilers, obviously, for this movie. These are all going to be spoilers, everyone. Right. So, calm down.
We don't want to have any bad blood with you.
We don't want to have any bad blood. Also, apparently, and I haven't, like, done a lot of research to confirm this, but one of my friends who likes these movies told me that the ending of... Scream 3 leaked online before it came out, and so they did reshoots to change it so that people wouldn't know what was going to happen. So some people blame that for the movie kind of being a little worse than the other ones.
Having done zero research, I think I want to just full out, like a person on the internet, say that's wrong, because this was the year 2000.
Yeah, I mean,
and
hey,
like video leaked to the internet and it was fucking watchable.
No, not video, like the script, like the ending.
Okay.
The ending of the script leaked, like someone somewhere like was like leaked who the killer was or something like that.
I got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Not yet. There wasn't like a one pixel.
Okay. Even if that's true, you wouldn't be able to tell who the killer was.
That reminds me, there was this movie that my parents I remember watched, and like. It was such a specific... Chris Evans was in it. It was called, like, Cellular or something. And it's such a specific time period movie because the whole plot of the movie revolves around the fact that he has a camera phone. Like, slash, I think a video phone.
Uh-huh.
And, like, it's the fact that he has a cell phone, can call people from wherever he needs to be, and also can take video is a huge plot point.
That's funny because that's at least a small plot point in the original Scream. Like, what's a kid like you doing with a cellular telephone? Yeah,
a cellular telephone, a digital camera.
Yeah.
But anyway, this movie is fun. It's goofy.
Yeah, so the killer... is killing the actors in Stab 3 in the order in which they die in the movie script.
Right.
So presumably it's someone involved with the shooting of the movie in that they know the script.
And there's a fun little wrinkle where it's like the script's been rewritten so many times they're not sure who's going to get killed next.
Yes, right. And so, it's also, you know, like in the sort of Scream tradition now that they've established, the killer works methodically to... movie rules, specifically involving Sydney and the original movie at this point, you know.
Yes. And so, like, Dewey and Gale are basically going by themselves for a while, and there's Patrick Dempsey is a cop,
mm-hmm.
and he's very young, and he's, like, working with them, but he's also kind of a suspect because he seems to be a little obsessed with Sydney in
That's
a weird way.
That's the thing that these movies do well, even in this movie, which I don't think was very great. I think it was fun. I think it was drag.
Yeah. It's very camp.
Yeah, but like I think the thing that these movies do really well is like nobody's not a suspect.
Yeah.
Like they really make that little mousy girl, what's her name? Angelina?
Angelina.
And Patrick Dempsey both, they make them both seem like very possible suspects.
And I was in the room when this was being watched, and I thought I remembered that the mousy girl was part of the one of the killers.
She really seemed like she would be.
Yeah, and I thought there were two killers, and this is the only one that where there's just one killer.
Right.
If I'm Emily Mortimer is the mm-hmm, British mm-hmm. actress's name, and she's very young in this, and sort of playing an ingenue type. That also, this movie weirdly has a lot to say about like Hollywood.
Yes,
it's so
totally.
Hollywood, and also has a lot to say about like the gross, creepy practices of producers and
totally.
Hollywood bigwigs, like sleeping with mostly young, impressionable women to like get them parts or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's
like,
also
like we said, Carrie Fisher makes that sort of offhand joke about it, but then like the big guy who's sort of the like John Carpenter analog.
Yeah.
Like the guy who's made a bunch of like horror movie successes in the 70s or whatever. Like he has this whole like cloud of like yuckiness around him.
Yeah. Well, and Weinstein produced these Scream movies too, which is crazy because it makes you think like, did Wes Craven know about stuff and was like, I'm gonna just be a real shithead to this guy and just
like
get one in under him, because like what's he gonna do, be like, you can't put that in the movie, because then that's gonna be really suspicious if he's like, don't put that in the movie. But anyway, turns out, here's what happens, everybody. A lot of stuff happens. Most of the cast gets murdered. They're all running away, blah, blah, blah. There is a voice changer in this movie that mm-hmm. can match any voice of anybody living or dead automatically, perfectly.
Have you seen the TikTok of the, it's like a tech report that says like, Bill Gates is quoted this weekend as saying that all business meetings will take place in the metaverse within the next 3 years. And then the like stitch that the woman does is she's like, hi, yeah, I'm a tech support person at a large company, and here are some of the help requests I got today. And that she like goes through like tech tickets that she got that day. And like one of them is like, subject line, can't. Description, blank. And like another is like, subject line, W-2. And then the description is, how do I email myself my W-2 to do my taxes? It's like, I suppose you would email yourself your W-2.
Email yourself? You've described what to do.
Yeah. Like, they're all things like that. Some of them are like, need the login for such and such website. And then her response is, we haven't used that web service in 2 years or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like... Yeah, right. Are people going to use the metaverse to have their business meetings within the next 3 years? Which is kind of the same thing of like, yeah, right, a voice changer can perfectly emulate any voice you've ever fucking dreamed of.
In 2000.
Yeah.
Two things. First off, when I worked in customer service for an app, like in a startup world, the amount of like tech support we would have to do for things that weren't our app was crazy. Because it'd be like... Okay.
Is your brightness turned up?
Like, go to settings on your computer.
Uh-huh.
All right. Like, click that. Like, having to talk to people how to operate their own printer.
Right.
Like, it's like, I don't know.
My printer says out of black ink. What do I do about that?
Okay. Go to Walmart. You're going to want, they're probably going to have it.
Buy a new printer, like, because it's cheaper than buying ink.
It's cheaper. Throw that printer away.
Yeah.
But like, it would just be wild.
Do you
like,
have any
we
like
would have,
kerosene or gasoline?
Kerosene, gasoline, any fire starting liquid.
Acetone.
Any fuel source.
Yeah.
But second, what was the other thing? Oh yeah. The voice changer thing reminds me so much of Mission Impossible. Cause in Mission Impossible 3, there's a plot point about trying to track and match Philip Seymour Hoffman's voice.
Right, and they make him say like all the different phonemes of the English language.
And they specifically are like, show us these quote-unquote science behind the voice changing technology.
Right, because in Mission Impossible 2, it's just like, inexplicably, you can copy any voice as long as you're wearing a mask of that person.
And then post Mission Impossible 3, it's the same thing again. It's just like, we don't worry about voice changing.
Right.
It's just like in that one movie, they're like, we're going to try to show them how it works. And it
but
reminds me
like
so much of this.
They've done the legwork to be like, yeah, this is conceivable.
Right. And it's just so funny in this, because it's just like, we went from doing, there's a voice changer where apparently everyone has access to a voice changer that makes you sound like the Scream killer.
Right.
Even though, how does anyone know what he sounds like? Because everyone who heard his voice died,
like,
or is Sidney Prescott.
Like, at this point, it's the merch from Stab, like the Stab franchise within the Scream universe. Like, they're making a voice changer to sound like that killer, and maybe just, like, the filmmakers of Stab took an incredibly lucky guess.
They got so lucky, because, like, like, it's not like Sidney was, like, going to tell them, okay, so this is what he sounded like. His voice was kind of scratchy, it's definitely a male, like...
Yeah, yeah, what's your favorite movie?
Do you want to die, Sidney? Like...
Yeah.
She's the only one who's heard his voice that's alive. Like, yeah, she's not going to go and be like, let me break it down for you. Let me do a police sketch of his voice for you.
Yeah. She gets, like, Billy West to come in and, like, do a bunch of just voiceover, like, okay.
Until he gets
scarier,
it right.
Scarier? Like, slimier?
Yeah. Do a little more nasal. Yeah. A little more nasal, actually. But yeah, they have a voice changer.
Can we get Tom Kenny?
The craziest one is that her... So Sydney's... In trilogy fashion, in big trilogy fashion, we learn that things that we thought to be true in the initial movies are not the whole story.
Right.
There's other things going on. Sydney's mom is super important in this. They also slut shame her back and forth.
Like,
and cross
crazy.
Like, when I watched Scream 4 with Charlie and her friends, they were like, at least in this one, they stopped slut shaming her mom. And it was like, for real, though.
Yeah, it's like really out of control.
In this one, it's a plot point is the fact that she was a big whore around town. And she was no Sharon Stone.
Right.
You know? I want to watch Scream 1 again. That's a good movie.
I know. Scream 1 really is good. Like, nothing like Scream 3 to, like, remind you how good the first one is. Like, there's the shot of, like, the boots in the bathroom stall. You know, like, they're referencing the original movie a number of times.
But, so basically what happens is there's a big showdown at this, like, big Hollywood mansion.
Right.
The killer ends up being just one person. He's the director of the movie. It turns out he's Sydney's half-brother.
Right.
Because Sydney's mom was an actor for 2 years or whatever and was, like, sexually assaulted by this movie studio executive and his friends and ended up having a kid who grew up to be this director. And he tried to go meet her as an adult, and she, like, basically rejected him. And so then he used that as, like, his motivation to follow her around, film her infidelities, give that to Billy Loomis, who's the killer in the first movie, which inspires him to then kill Sydney's mom and then try to kill everybody else. So it turns out it was this guy all along.
Yeah, it's the, like, somehow Palpatine returned of the Scream franchise. It's like, actually, really pulling the strings of all the movies you've already seen, which, like, the instinct there isn't bad. It's sort of like, oh, I'm rewarding you for coming to the third movie by saying, you know, yes, those first ones counted, but actually they were all just puppets from this guy. You know, like, it's not like I don't know, because that thing never works out in a satisfactory way, but it isn't like a bad idea to be like, actually, you know.
It's also because, once again, it's like you said, the movie knows that it's not the best movie.
Right.
And it is already said what it's going to do when it describes trilogies.
Uh-huh.
And so,
like,
it does
the rules or whatever.
It does everything that it says it's going to do. And it's not the most satisfying, like, thing, but it also doesn't take away from the other movies to me. Like, it very much feels like I could go back.
Yeah.
And watch Scream 1 and 2 and see them as their own thing and not in the background be thinking, well, you know, actually, Billy Loomis was actually given this video by whoever, whatever, blah, blah. Like
actually,
I don't feel...
Ray's dad was a clone of Palpatine.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need... That doesn't ruin it for me. It just makes it like... It makes the third one fun in a goofy way.
Yeah.
And doesn't do anything to make one or two bad.
Totally.
Now, am I still in love with Neve Campbell? Yes. How is my journey to become her mother going?
You want to be her mom.
Right. I think I can't remember how we got
there. I already forget too, and we recorded that 1 week ago.
Yeah, a week ago. Still, I mean, as far as I know, she is. Hold on 1 second. My mic is being weird.
Nah, 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 nah.
We.
Oh, your mic.
Yeah, no, not you, Mike. My Mike was being weird. She's still great. I love Neve Campbell. That's the end. Should we do a quick Monday?
Yeah, you do yours first.
Welcome to Mondays, baby. This is where we talk about Pokemon and Digimon.
On a Monday.
On a Monday. Which, it's Monday when we're recording this right now, too. Mm-hmm. This is, like, going to be a really true, a true Monday.
Yeah.
I just want to come in and say, listen, I've watched a couple episodes since the last time. Ash still doesn't have any new badges. He still has 5, I think, was it where we were the last
Something
time I checked
like that,
in?
Yeah.
But excellent episode, iconic episode. Goodbye, Pikachu, or Pikachu says goodbye. And, so cute. Guys, this show's so cute. Pokemon's a cute show. It's for kids, it's cute. They're out in the wilderness, and guess what? They meet a bunch of wild Pikachus.
Oh, yes.
And Pikachu immediately is like, huh? And then becomes friends with those Pikachus. And it's funny because, like, there's a baby Pikachu, but even though it should be a Pichu, but Pichu sure. wasn't invented yet.
Right.
So it's just, like, a smaller Pikachu. But
when Pikachu
very
sees
cute.
All the other Pikachus, does he do this?
Yeah, he looks shocked. He's like, thunk.
That, like,
I
want to
get a tattoo
of
that, of shocked Pikachu. I'm going to get a tattoo of shocked Pikachu on my face. And I'll cover it up, and then whenever I'm shocked, I'll be like, I did.
So you walk through life constantly with your hand on your cheek. Yeah.
I did. There was these, like, I got, like, a temporary tattoo thing one time, like, called Ink Box.
Oh, yeah.
And they had one that was a shocked Pikachu, and I put it on my hand so that I could cover my mouth.
That's funny.
Which I was like, that would be a tattoo that if I was someone who just got random tattoos, I would absolutely get shocked Pikachu on my hand so I could just cover my mouth and be like, you know, and so everyone could see how I feel.
Yeah, right.
If you're a person who gets tattoos, please get shocked that. Pikachu on the back of your
and
hand.
And send us an Instagram, like, tag us on Instagram or Twitter. Yeah.
And of you covering your mouth and being shocked with the shocked Pikachu on your face. But it's really cute because Pikachu saves the baby Pikachu, and then, like, Ash and Brock is like, wow, Pikachu really loves being out here in the wild with other Pikachus. And it makes Ash be like, oh, maybe I should leave Pikachu here. He'll be happier without me. And so then Ash is like, bye, Pikachu. And he leaves Pikachu. And it's so sad. And there's all these flashbacks where Ash is, like, remembering all the good times. And then Pikachu follows him.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he runs into his arms and he catches him. And it's beautiful. And it made Charlie cry. It made Charlie cry while we were watching.
Oh, my God. That is so funny. Now, conversely, really my Monday update is I've watched some more Digimon, and when we last left them, Devimon separated them all, and they were all on different islands, and then just like the first few episodes where each person kind of got a little showcase of their Digimon, and they got to Digivolve and all that, similar formula where each episode was two people finding each other again, and the gang gotcha. Slowly coming back together, and then kind of culminating in TK's Patamon digivolving into Angemon or Angemon.
Right, Angemon.
But the thing I had to kind of say about my Digimon update and our Monday segment in general is I am already bored.
I may keep
watching, but, like, it's certainly not even interesting enough to, like, have said the, like, 30 words I just said. So I'm happy to hear if Ash gets to Cinnabar Island and beats Blaze or whatever his name is, Blaine, I'm happy to hear, like, let me know, but I'm done updating everybody on Digimon.
All right, well, this has been week 2 and the last Monday, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
If you really liked Mondays, tweet at us, tell us to bring it back.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get... Maybe Mike can start watching some other show that has Mon in the name.
Sure.
It's, like, more interesting. I don't know. Should we go to the break?
Yeah, I think so.
Wee!
Woohoo!
And we're stabbed in the back.
And we're stabbed 3.
And we're stabbed 3.
Man, Welcome I'm excited back. To talk about Scream 4 because of all the, like, stab cold opens.
Me too. I honestly might rewatch that too. I watched it like 2 weeks ago and I kind of want to watch it again.
I know. That's the thing with these movies. They are fun, and even, like, when they're silly, it's still full of, like, fun details. And then, like, 5 minutes later, it has completely left my brain.
Yeah.
Like, I as you were describing, like, the reason how Gail and Dewey kind of came back together, I was like, oh, okay, I believe you. Like, I don't remember any of the details.
Also, watching them all in, like, they start blending together.
Yeah, it's like the James Bond movies. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, which one is it where this thing happens and which this one is? Yeah. Anyway, welcome to the game. This game is called Trilogies.
Okay.
And it's similar to games I've done before, but it's slightly different because, of course, you know I'm using Rotten Tomatoes because I love to make Mike guess Rotten Tomatoes things. So, in this game, we're going to look at some of the world's finest trilogies / most famous trilogies. Because in this movie, in Scream, a lot is talked about trilogies and the rules of trilogies.
Sure.
And so we're looking at some of the world's best trilogies / most famous trilogies. And Mike, your goal is to put them in order from highest Rotten Tomatoes score to lowest Rotten Tomatoes score. And bonus points if you can get the percentage right, which I've definitely given you some of these before. Like, I've definitely given you these percentages before, which I don't expect you to remember. That would be insane.
Sure.
But you might have a slight upper hand because I'm trying to
find the order of the trilogies compared to one another, or the movies within a trilogy.
The movies within a trilogy. Okay, okay. So, like, for example, mm-hmm. we're going to start with Scream. Mm. 1, 2, and 3. Initially just a trilogy, right?
Just a single movie.
Initially just a screenplay.
a screenplay.
A screenplay. Initially called Scary Movie. Which is a great name.
Speaking of trilogies, before we get into this, I had a class in college where I may have even told this story before, but our teacher had a Twitter, and it was like right at sort of like the dawn of Twitter, or like it becoming like a bit more mainstream. So he would post like clues for the exams on Twitter, and like he would like post things about like extra credit opportunities on the test. Like, we would always have an extra credit question that was just like a cute, fun thing that you could get like an extra point or whatever if you did it. Anyway, our final for the semester, he gave us a bunch of different clues on Twitter that all equated to essentially, like, you got to know your trilogies. And I was like, oh, I'm going to fucking nail this. Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, like, what's it going to be? The Matrix? And then when I get there, coincidentally at the time, I was in the middle of reading the third Hunger Games book. The final test question on our final exam was PETA or Gale? Like, that's all of it was. And so, you know, to get the point or the 3 points or whatever it amounted to, you had to write either PETA or Gale. And that's it. I wrote like a 5-paragraph essay.
Good.
As to like the pros and cons of each. And then like, so if it means like, who do I want Katniss to end up with? That's one thing. But then there's the like, who do I relate most to? You know, like, it was this whole fucking thing. And then on my way home from college that year, I stopped at one point to get gas and I looked at Twitter and I was like tagged in a tweet and it was from that professor. And he said like, just got the single best extra credit answer I've ever gotten on a final as a teacher.
Incredible.
I was like, yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
That would go viral these days. I tell
totally.
You. So to start out, Scream 1, Scream 2, Scream 3.
So put at some point I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes, or by accident I saw the Rotten Tomatoes of Scream 3, and it's like below 50% if I remember. So I'm gonna guess it is 1, 2, 3.
What are your percentages?
Give me what you think. Oh, okay. 3, I
think,
was
this
like,
is just for extra credit.
Yeah, I think 3 was like 46.
Okay.
And I would guess that 1 is like 86 and that 2 is like 71.
All right. You are close, but no cigar, because would you believe that Scream 2 is actually rated higher by critics at 81%.
That's insane.
than Scream 1, which has 79%.
That is the sort of Return of the King winning the Oscar thing. That's like critics going, oh, we sort of slept on the first Scream and actually it was good.
Yeah. Although the audience score is reversed for that by a pretty big margin.
So 81 and 79, is that what you said?
81 and 79, Scream 3 has 41%.
41,
and
okay.
The audience score for Scream 1 is 79% as well. Audience score for Scream 2 is 57%. And then for Scream 3 is 37%. So a pretty steep drop off, especially between critics and audience consensus on Scream 2.
Yeah.
Which I like Scream 2, but saying it's better than Scream 1 is insane.
Speaking of Scream 2, you know what this movie does that Scream 2 does in terms of like how Star Wars is it? Like establishing tropes and then repeating yourself, you know? It does the like two-way glass thing.
It does.
Like we can't hear the person who's about to get killed thing.
Now, speaking of our podcast,
uh-oh,
we got the original Star Wars trilogy. This one's a gimme, but I want to see if you can get those percentages. Put them in order from highest to lowest, the original trilogy.
Well, you know, I don't know how much of a gimme this is because I don't know how Rotten Tomatoes factors in like the original, you know, reviews of like the 80s and late 70s. Mm-hmm. So, because I would guess it's also like 1, 2, 3, Star Wars, Empire, Return of the Jedi, because I think critics didn't know what to make of Empire at the time. But
now,
I wonder if that's the case in the modern era with, you know, Rotten Tomatoes.
I will tell you what it is, and then you will tell me what you think the percentages
are. Okay.
It is actually currently episode 5 is number 1.
Okay.
Then episode 4, then episode 6. Can you give me the percentages?
Critic score. Okay,
yep.
I'm gonna guess that Empire Strikes Back is like 89.
Okay.
And Star Wars is like 80. And Return of the Jedi is like 75.
Wow, you are being a harsh critic.
Oh, okay.
Empire is 94, baby.
Whoa. Yeah, I guess Star Wars, sort of forget how Rotten Tomatoes works. It's like Star Wars, basically favorable versus not favorable, right? Like that's how
pretty much. Star Wars Episode 4 is 92%.
Okay.
Star Wars Episode 6 is 82%.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You were being really harsh.
Uh-huh.
Next, Lord of the Rings.
Oh gosh. See, this is another one where like my opinion might not be the critic opinion. But
now,
I'm going to guess
you
that they're all in the like low 90s, high 80s, just to like recalibrate a little. I'm going to guess Two Towers, 90. Return of the King, 88. Fellowship, 86.
Okay, that was pretty good. Your percentages are close. They're like the right margin off of each other, but they need to, but just like plus 5 to each of them.
Okay, I'm still skewing low.
Yeah, you're still being a little harsh. Two Towers is number 1 with 95%.
Yes.
Return of the King is 93%. Fellowship is 92%.
Nice.
So all very good movies, apparently. I need to rewatch those. It's been a minute. Didn't you watch the extended editions recently?
I did. It had been a while. I used to watch them like once a year.
We're going now to the Dark Knight trilogy, the newest Batman movies.
Okay.
Put them in order for me, if you please.
I'm gonna guess that it is The Dark Knight, number 1, with a bullet. And I don't know. I think Batman Begins is a better movie than Dark Knight Rises, but did the critics? I'm gonna say they did.
Okay. It is Dark Knight, of course, with a bullet.
Uh-huh.
And surprising to me, Dark Knight Rises second, Batman Begins third. Can you give me percentages?
That makes sense because the critics would be giving Dark Knight Rises like points because it's a sequel to The Dark Knight and they all fucking forgot about Batman Begins.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to say it's like 98,
90, 88.
94, 87, 84. Okay.
So you were close.
Dancing around it every time.
Every time you're dancing. If you get one of these, it's going to be like whenever I get the Star Wars Minute game, right? It's going to feel so good.
Like when you get the Wordle on the second try.
Yeah. Never happened to me. I stopped playing
Wordle. Me neither, but Caitlin did today.
What a freak.
I got it on 3 today.
Nice. That always,
three is like so satisfying.
Yeah, the first time I got it on 3, I was like, I can never play again.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm too good now. Now, we're going classic trilogies again, and this is just my classic for me. The Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy.
Okay.
This one might be a little bit of a gimme, but put them in order
for
me.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was probably 2 is the first, and then 1, and then 3.
You're right. Give me those percentages.
I'm going to say 2 just did gangbusters like 96.
Okay,
and
okay.
And then 1 is like 90, and then 3 is like 80.
1 is 90. You got it right on
yes!
the money. 2 is only 93, though.
Oh, wow.
And then 3 is 63.
Oh!
Yeah.
I should have guessed lower than 80. That was a mistake.
People did not like that one.
Hell yeah, I got one right on the money.
You got one right on the money. Doesn't it feel so good?
It does.
We're going to Back to the Future now.
Mm.
All right. 1, 2, 3. Put them in order for me.
You know, I think I might say it's 1, 2, 3.
You know, would you believe it is 1, 3, 2?
I would believe that. I think that movie critics in 19... When did the second and third come out? It was the same year, probably 1988.
89. And then 90 was part 3.
Oh, okay. They shot them at the same time, and they came out within a year of one another, but maybe not the same calendar year. But I'm going to guess that the critics in 1990 all were horny for fucking Western movies.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so 1, 3, 2, that's fine. I'm going to say that 1 is far and away above the other 2, and that 3 and 2 are kind of close together. So I'm going to say, like, 94... 84 and 80.
96 for 1.
Okay.
80 for 3.
Yes.
65 for 2.
Oh, I see. 65. Yeah. Jesus, that's sort of surprising.
I know. I was like, it's better than that.
It is weird, but it isn't bad. It's like, it's the classic Act 2. Where
yeah,
you can
exactly.
kind of just do a bunch of crazy shit. Maybe
we're
because it
around.
Didn't end, you know? It would just
yeah.
sort of like stopped and then it was time to watch the third one.
Yeah, that's true. Classic again for me, for Josiah, the X-Men trilogy, the initial X-Men
mm-hmm,
trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
X-Men, X2, and X-Men The Last Stand. Put them in order for me.
Well, so I'm going to have to do the Raimi Spider-Man order, I think. 2, 1, 3.
You're right. Can you get the percentages?
I'm going to say 2 was, let's see, that was like in the early 2000s, and Spider-Man was so good, and X-Men, I think, was probably fringy enough that, like, critics probably thought less of it than they did of Spider-Man, bizarrely. I'm going to say, like, 2 was 90, and 1 was 88, and 3 was, like, 62.
You're closest with 3 there. X2 had 85%. X-Men has 82%,
okay.
And X-Men 3 has 57%.
Wow, yeah. Just dog yeah. shit.
Yeah, just not a great flick.
I'm picturing, like, Ebert and Roper at the time being like, they tried to do Dark Phoenix, and they just sort of shit the bed, as opposed to just being, like, real film critics.
Yeah, they're like, it was
they're
a
both,
real...
like, big Claremont stands.
Yeah, they love just that era of X-Men comics. They love the 70s, 90s.
Leonard okay. Maltin was like, that was
now,
no John Byrne joint.
Now, we've done this before, so I'm interested to see if you can remember. The Toy Story trilogy, Toy Story 1, 2, 3.
This is tough because they all kind of do a different thing. I think people love Toy Story 2, but like for me, number one with a bullet without any competition is Toy Story 1.
Okay.
Because of fucking these guys.
Legs, you're with Ducky.
The Sid guys. So I think I might have to guess 1, 2, 3.
You are technically correct. Can you give me the percentages?
Technically correct. So I wonder if 1 and 2 are tied. So like 93 and 90.
Toy Story 1 and 2. This is what I was going to be curious if you remembered. Toy Story 1 and 2 both have 100%.
Wow.
Toy Story 3, 98%.
Jesus. That's right, because in the more recent day and age, like, high Rotten Tomatoes scores are not, like, super rare anymore.
No, not as rare. They're still not very many at 100%, but they're not as rare.
Man, 100%.
For two of them to have 100% is just crazy.
Yeah. Well, and Toy Story 2 did such a great sequel thing of, like, you know, the big hotshot new guy in town in the first one is Buzz Lightyear, and then because he's new, and then we find out Woody's actually a hotshot because he's old, you know, like they
do that
sequel thing where it's like, okay, let's just throw away everything and turn it upside down.
Yeah, let's just flip roles real quick.
Yeah.
Let's do True West, but we'll trade roles every night.
Mm-hmm.
last one.
Yeah, wait, who did that?
It was the freaking, what's his name?
They did that with Jekyll and Hyde recently, too. Like, Jason Segel and, not recently, this is probably fucking 10 years ago.
What's his name? But the guy who played, oh my God, this is the worst credit, but Dewey Cox and Walk Hard. What's his freaking name?
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly, and I want to say Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes.
Yeah. And they would, like, flip a coin to see who was going to play which part each night.
Yeah.
Which True West is a great play for that, because it's just two angry men.
Right, right.
So it's like, you can both play that part for sure.
Right.
Last one, just to go with our show and a recent month, The Matrix Trilogy.
I think for sure that's 1, 2, 3.
It is 1, 2, 3. Now, I'm really interested to see if you can get these percentages.
Yeah, my guess is, because, like, audiences hated the sequels, but critics, they didn't love them, but I think they gave them a bit fairer of a shake. So I'm going to guess 1 is, like, 98, and that 2 is, like, 79, and 3 is, like, 70.
Okay, you are way off.
Oh, shit.
Which, this is what's interesting to me. The Matrix, 88%.
Wow.
Are you kidding
That's
me?
That's so fucked.
That's fucked up. The fact that it's not above 90 is a joke.
Yeah, that's really fucking crazy.
It's an absolute joke.
I mean, it did weirdly, I mean, like, it was a huge commercial success for, like, what it was, but, like, it was weird and, like, it wasn't huge names, and it was these directors no one had heard of, you know, like.
It's true. It was a swing. Matrix Reloaded, 73%.
88, 73. What, I said 70-something, I think, didn't I?
You did say 70-something. You were close with that one. Now, this is what's crazy to me. Audience and critic scores are very close for Matrix 1 and 2. Matrix Revolutions, its critic score, 35%.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Audience is 60%, though. So it's much more consistently, like, with the other ones. But, like, the drop-off, which seems crazy to me, because Reloaded and Revolutions are such a package deal to me.
Completely.
That I'm like, you're telling me that you as critics could see 2 and be like, yeah, that was pretty good. And
yeah,
then see 3 and be like,
yeah, that to me feels like critics felt burned after seeing the second one. And then we're just like, this one fucking sucked too.
Yeah, exactly. It feels inconsistent. Cause it's like, no,
I agree that it is significantly worse than the first two.
Yeah.
But like 30 something is kind of crazy. Yeah. 30-something percent is, like, not acknowledging that, like, a team of people made a movie. You know what I mean? Like,
and got, like, that is saying that they got more wrong than they got right.
By,
which,
like, a 2-to-1 margin.
A really large margin.
Yeah, like, like, that's, like, not acknowledging that they had, like, miniature models and CGI and, like, you know, like I feel like a 35% is, like, The Room.
yeah, exactly. I wonder what The Room has on Rotten Tomatoes. That was trilogies.
Yay! That was fun.
One of the mini games where I make Mike guess numbers. Yeah, The Room has 23% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I mean,
you're telling me that The Matrix Revolutions is 10% better than The Room?
Right.
Like,
critically.
No.
Yeah.
No. Even if we're just looking at intentions.
Yeah.
Like, it meets its intentions a lot more. It's silly. It's a silly. Ratings are all fake anyway. None of it matters.
Sure.
But I like looking at them because I think it's interesting.
Speaking of, we just watched, we got a 7-day free trial to Broadway HD, which is a streamer that has a woefully sorry low amount of titles.
Yeah, because Broadway is stupid.
Yeah, but I really wanted to watch The Pippin from like the 70s. In fact, it was shot in like the early 80s, I think. But first of all, bullshit, terrible quality. Audio is terrible. The video is not all that good. But anyway, I love Pippin. It's not, this production was not terribly well documented. And the show itself is like certainly like not super compelling, but I love it because I was in it as a kid. Anyway, we got the trial to watch that, and then we've watched, I think, only one other thing on there so far, but it was a, like, COVID rehearsal studio production of Title of Show.
Whoa.
And it was British folks. So, but that story is about, like, New Yorkers making a play on Broadway, you know? So, all doing American accents, like, plus or minus, but we need to get rid of it tomorrow. Anyway, the reason I brought that up is because we also recently watched a community production of Spelling Bee on YouTube, because we were talking about Spelling Bee. And wait, now why did I bring that up?
Ratings?
Yes, it was ratings. It was because Title of Show, not because of Spelling Bee. There's the whole scene in that show where the two writers are on the phone with each other, and one's like, "Did you see the bad review we got?" And the other one's like, "You're not supposed to read reviews. Those don't even matter." And then someone else calls the guy who just said that, and she's like, "Did you see the great review we got in the Times?" And he's like, "Oh my God." And he like recalls the other guy. He's like, "Did you see the great review we got?" And he's like, "I thought you said don't read those." And he's like, "That was just some bullshit I pulled out of my ass to make us feel better."
Yeah. Having been in shows that get reviews,
mm-hmm.
It is a weird thing. Like, there's always oftentimes there is a conversation amongst the theater company, but they'll send out an email and be like, "Don't talk about reviews in the rehearsal space," or I guess not rehearsal space, more like dressing room.
Right.
It's like, "Don't talk about reviews in the dressing room backstage," because not everyone likes to hear them.
Yeah, right.
Good or bad. Because sometimes people I always read them because I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, right.
If the people like or don't like me, I'm like I have been mentioned by name in a review one time,
and it was
great, and they liked it, and I was like, fucking fantastic.
Yeah, that's a nice feeling.
One show I was in where I had a part big enough to get mentioned by name in the reviews, and that was cool. Every other time, I've never been big enough to get it, but I'll still read them because I want to know what they think. And if they don't like it, I'll be like, okay, I can look at things. I don't know. I feel like I can look at my own performance and the performance I'm in objectively enough to be like, yeah, I can see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Like, unless they just didn't get the concept entirely, in which case I'm like, that's like, fine.
Oh, well, then you can throw this whole review out.
Yeah, art is completely subjective. Right. So if you didn't get it and you didn't like it because you didn't get it, then like, that's fine.
Right.
Like, we don't all like everything. It's okay.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Reviews are weird.
I was in a show when I still lived in Indy, it was like a live sitcom, and so like every other week they would have a new episode, and we'd do last week's episode, and then we would do the next week's episode.
That's fun.
Like, for the people who came. And I was like a classic Mike Gospel type character. Like, I was an intern. And I remember as I was like learning the script and like making acting decisions for all that mattered for a one night only sitcom for nobody at a cabaret, you know, like not for nobody, but like a small house, one time only with other comedy dorks. But yet to that level of making acting decisions, I was like, just don't do Michael Cera. Do like, cause that's like, that's me. And I was like, maybe I'll try to do like Kenneth the Page from 30 Rock or that sort of energy, which isn't dissimilar from Michael Cera, but it's more, like blissfully ignorant confidence as opposed to like nervous boy.
Yeah.
So we got a review and it was like kind because it knew what the thing was, which was sort of like a shoestring rinky dink little comedy show. It wasn't like lauding us for creating high art by any stretch, but it was like generally kind of nice. But then it called me out by name specifically and said that I was good, but said like, you know, Ashley the intern, played by a dead ringer for George Michael Bluth from Arrested Development, Mike Gospel. And I was like, no, that's what I was trying not to do.
The one thing I was trying not to do. No, damn. That's hilarious.
I thought that was
they
so
got
funny.
You, man. They freaking got you.
I was like, well, I guess that's me.
Well, we talked about trilogies, and we talked about how Princess Leia's in this movie.
I was going to say, yeah, Princess Leia, like, as, like, a reference in this movie that is about trilogies, like, they say it, they say that as much, is funny because, like, the big reveal of Return of the Jedi is Princess Leia. Like, that
right.
She's Luke's sister. And so it's that like kind of funny that like the trilogy most person of Star Wars, Leia,
yeah. is Charlie movie. Like literally while we were watching it, Charlie was like, what's the thing in Star Wars that changes everything or like that's different from what you originally thought? And I was like, I told her, I was like, yeah, it's that like they were brother and sister the whole time.
Right. But there's just nothing like to in this movie, the reveal of Darth Vader is much more cool and satisfying than the reveal of, like, actually, they were brother and sister the whole time.
Well, holy shit, I didn't even realize that is, they're literally, the fact that they, like, talk about Star Wars and that they're brother and sister the whole time.
Yes, the killer is her brother.
The same twist at the end of this one. They were brother and sister the whole time. That's crazy. I didn't realize that. These movies are so wild because they tell you exactly what they're going to do.
Uh-huh. And then they do it.
And then they do it. And it still makes me go like, whoa.
Like, oh my God, wow.
How did they do that? Yeah. It's like, we told you what we were going to do.
Yeah, totally.
We literally had Jamie Kennedy get on screen and say, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, they're just really good at sort of lulling you. It's like that sort of thing that like magicians will do sometimes where they're like, okay, I'm going to teach you a trick. And then they show you how they do like the most basic part of it. But then all of a sudden they're like pulling shit from places you weren't even thinking to look. And it's like, oh, this was never about you teaching me a trick.
Right. Now I understand.
This
you're
was about you engaging
me
and making me feel included. And then you're like pulling a thing like literally out of my ear. Like it was in there somehow.
There should be that makes me want to see a magician who's like, whole deal is that they're like trying there's a whole the prelude to the trick is them just like becoming friends with you. It's like a real
like you meet at, like at a bar and you like hit it off.
Like you are invited to like, and maybe it's romantic, you don't know yet. Mm-hmm. Like you're seeing where things are go and they invite you to the show and they're like, this is my friend Jim. And then you're like, hi, and you don't even know they're a magician.
Yeah.
You've been lured into such a false sense of security that you don't even know they're a magician.
That'd be a fun twist to put in our Choose Your Own Adventure podcast. Like, okay, for if you want to go into the cave, you know, go to podcast episode like 12. But if you want to stay at the bar, go to episode 19. And then it's like,
yes,
the person you're talking to ends up like doing some kind of long con magic trick on you.
They just are like this is good. Okay, we'll remember that. This is good. Normally we have these kind of great ideas on the Patreon.
It was
this
all
is
a magic trick. We'll put that on our little sticky note.
Yeah, it was all a magic the whole time. I want less it was all a dream the whole time and more this was all an elaborate magic trick.
Yeah. This is all this weird sort of like magic gaslighting.
Yeah. Someone comes in at the end of every movie from now on and goes,
right with me.
While they're holding like a jack of clubs and it's like, huh?
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
And a golden brick falls from the sky.
Yeah, right. yeah, wait. A story that begins, the first line is, and he held out the jack of clubs and said, is this your card? And then you read an entire book. Like, it's just sort of like, you know how like chapters will open with like a sentence, but then like something else will actually be the prose of the story.
Sure.
That's the first like chapter opener sentence. And then at the very end, like the person is having some sort of like card trick done to them and they grab the jack of clubs.
Yep. It tells you right out of the gate. Uh-huh.
This is a trilogy.
Now, this is fun. What if, can we just, that would like, The idea of trying to like write down a magic trick, like to describe a magic trick in prose is very funny.
Yeah, that to is me. Funny.
Like, his hands moved in a fast way.
Yeah.
And I
something
couldn't
was up,
see.
But I couldn't tell what.
I couldn't tell. Like, it would be really easy to do because you'd be like, yeah. He moved around and then hit the card came out and it was
like
the
magic.
Right card. Like, there's no way. If you want it to be, if you want to get across the fact that it was a good magic trick, you can't describe it
yeah,
that
right.
well because then people will
it's
know
like
what happened.
It's like when people describe a song. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
What are you gonna? It sounded good.
I can't
good.
Remember who the quote is by, but it's some famous artist like a Picasso or a Dali or something is like, or maybe it's a famous
Dolly,
architect.
Dolly
I can't remember, but it's something. Yeah, Dali Parton.
Salvador Dali Parton. That should be something mm-hmm. anyway.
It's working 9 to 5, but the 5 is like upside down and the 9 is melting off.
Yeah, the clock, it's the 9 to 5 yeah. clock, but it's melting.
The quote that I'm misattributing is, something like, writing about music is like dancing about architecture.
Yeah, that sounds about right. You dance about architecture all the time.
I do, that's true.
You love buildings.
Uh-huh. And I show my love with the movements of my body.
With dance. Uh-huh.
Anyway,
is there sneaking around? Yes.
Sure.
Do you want us on the internet? If you do, you
we
can
didn't
find
even give this a rating.
No, I know.
I think I've got it's, a unit of measure already picked out.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, they're sneaking around. And it is like very aware of being a trilogy, but it is like, and it's very meta, which is a Star Wars characteristic.
It's very meta.
But otherwise, you know, it's like a comedy horror movie.
It's comedy horror, which we've mentioned before, two things that Star Wars explicitly does not yeah. do.
What did we give Scream 2? Do you remember?
I don't remember, like
don't
a
either.
3 or something.
What
I don't
was
know.
The,
I refuse
we just
to be.
Did this.
I refuse to be held accountable for anything I've said in the past on this show.
Yeah,
and that
sure.
includes the ratings we have literally just given something a week earlier.
Right. Okay, so my unit of measure is going to be entries in a film franchise.
Good, good, good. Mine will be, let's see. Mine will be voices in a voice changer. I think I'm going to give it 3.
Yeah, that's where I am. Scream 3, Stab 3, it gets a 3.
Scream 3, Stab 3, it gets a 3.
Yeah.
Well, folks,
and I mean,
we did
like,
it.
You know, from sandwiches to Star Wars.
Sandwiches to Star Wars, it's a 3. Tune in next week for Scream 4,
yeah.
and then the week after that, we're going to do the new Screams,
yeah.
which is just
which called, is
called Scream.
Scream. Yeah, you know what's funny? We'll talk about this next week for sure, but like Scream 4 is all about like being a reboot. Like, what mm-hmm. the fuck are they going to do with Scream 5?
I know. I'm curious to see how it goes.
Yeah.
Well, do you want us on the internet? Because if you do, you can find us at How Star Wars Is It on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us at agoodpodcast@gmail.com. Sandra, we're still waiting
yeah.
for you to respond.
And we love to Patreon. Get your tweets and your Instagrams and your emails. We also love the select few of you who subscribe to our Patreon.
We
and
do.
If this is the first time you're hearing of this, I'd be shocked. But we have a Patreon, patreon.com/howstarwarsisit, where every week we do an additional bonus episode. In fact, we just recorded this week's right before this tonight. We usually start out our night recording the Patreon to go all bonkers and cover a bunch of different stories of things we
just
like or movies we watched or like barber shop stories.
Yes.
Anyway, that's anyway. Only $5 a month to get a weekly bonus episode plus a monthly commentary of the different Star Wars films, and we're almost done with all 11 Star Wars films of watching
we
along
are.
And talking during them.
We are getting very close, and we're going to do some different other kind of contraries. And we've also had some interesting ideas over there on the Patreon for future content that you should go listen
yeah,
to the
right.
Patreon to hear what those ideas are, because we're not going to spoil
them all
here.
Just what the ideas are.
Yeah.
Who knows if we'll follow through with them.
Yeah, we may do them.
Yeah.
Maybe. But sandwiches of Star Wars, it's about time for today. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
So like we always say,
we love you.
And may the fourth be with you. Bye-bye.
You wanna die, Sydney?
You wanna die, Sydney? What's your favorite scary movie?
What's your favorite color?
What's your favorite?
Yeah, I like that.
What's your favorite color? Red.
'Cause blood.
Blood.
Blood. Like that YouTube video.